Bob, now, I was a little curious about your background. That Secret Council of Ten kind of intrigued my, piqued my curiosity. Can you talk about that?
Oh, yeah, you can go to FiveBodied, FiveBodied.com, and see the website, the ongoing blogs and forums, and hear the whole history, but I'll give you a quick synopsis.
Yeah.
I was born in 1922 in a family in France that was a butler for 300 years for one of the richest families in Europe, and you can even read a story by Charles Dickens in a collection of his miscellaneous journalistic articles where he refers to my great-grandfather, Dobbs, and that's a side thing. That's about 1854 or so. Anyways, growing up in that environment, the European oligarchs, after World War One, you got that crisis in the 20s due to the electronic radio environment made currency become inflated, so it collapses in the late 20s and early 30s, and money becomes public property in the 30s. That's the beginning of the welfare states, the fascist states, the social states, the communists, and the New Deal. And therefore, the private ownership of money was weakened and vulnerable. So the intelligence agencies that the oligarchs in Europe used up through World War II and then were really effective. Remember, the main image of World War II is the collapse of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, which was a figurehead for the city of London and that historical interchange, interlinked money system known as the oligarchy or the Fondi, F-O-N-D-I, an Italian word for trust. So after World War II, there was really no real structure to support the intelligence agencies that had been around the oligarchies, so they formed their own network based on their historical power, and all they did was monitor, and they had the telecommunications to do it, monitor what was happening as, quote, the world government around the United Nations and the American Empire got solidified. And so because it was such a smaller circle, my father was brought in as a butler for his employer and boss. He was brought in to do intelligence work in the 20s and 30s, and you can read my diaries all about that, and which are on the site. But the point is, I was brought in at the end of World War II at the Battle of the Bulge. Look at that movie, Inglourious Bastards.
Yes, that was quite a entertaining film.
Yeah, that's the environment I was in the late 1944-45 period around the Battle of Malmedy. And the Battle of Bulge, and the exchange of the Project Paperclip scientists and the beginning of bringing the Nazis over. So I was on the inside of that, and then I came to North America in the 50s and worked around the old Rockefeller establishment, eventually became head of the Secret Council 10, which really meant the solar government, which was the people who could monitor on the highest level, known popularly now as Echelon, E-C-H-E-L-O-N. You might have heard of Echelon. That was the leftover of the solar government structure. And we would be looking into the latest technologies. That's what I did. I was there with Albert Hofmann the week that he found LSD. That was only by accident. I was there with my father in April 43. In retrospect, we found out that was the week he had the famous bicycle ride. But those kind of things we would be on top of because we had to see what technologies would allow us to get back into maybe a stronger position.
Interesting. Now, who's running the show today? Have things changed dramatically since then? Is there some kind of power structure shakeup at all that's going on?
That happened in the 1980s, and in the final throes of the Secret Council 10, the solar government, in 1988, I became chairperson or chairman of the thing, and I consciously disbanded it in 1990. You saw the surface effects of that was the death of Prince Turnintaxis, T-H-U-R-N-U-N-D-T-A-X-I-S. You can read about him in Thomas Pynchon's book, Crying of Lot 49, and the collapse of Buckingham Palace, of Prince Charles in that scene with Lady Di freaking out, and the end of the Gorbachev Empire, and what was the other thing? And there was another factor. What was it? You got Gorbachev goes down, Prince Charles goes down, Turnintaxis, and then the weakened Rockefeller family. So anyways, that situation, I disbanded. You can read the steps of how that happened in my diary. And so it was in nowhere place, and I'm going to get into a perfect pattern that leads us into ION.
Okay.
McLuhan explained that all technologies were extensions of our senses, inner and outer. So you finally had the extension of the central nervous system with television and computers, and then the extension of the planet itself by a satellite. Then the digital technology comes in. Now, I call that the Android meme, and what that is, that's technologies coming alive and extending themselves. Not the human body's parts and faculties were not being extended anymore after the satellite. So we've seen over the last 30, 40 years the extension of technologies within technology. It's doing its own thing. And you just look around at the pop culture. Everybody sat in the sidelines from the time of Reagan on. Everybody said, well, technology's out of control. Well, that situation of the Android meme collapsed over the last few years, and we now have not the extensions of our faculties or machines extending themselves. We have the non-physical showing up as an extension, and that's ION. It's a new technology.
Huh. Very interesting. Now, let's segue into JW and ION and how you both met, and then how JW first came into touch with ION and had that experience. I have a feeling it's kind of dramatic.
Yeah, it begins with my partner, my bride, Dr. Carolyn Dean, who is sitting here and could speak if she wants to, but she's monitoring this conversation here in Maui. But she met JW in Atlanta, Georgia in December 2005. They had a conversation. They did a little business, but nothing dramatic. It was just a new person for each of them to meet. But a few years, 3 months later, JW called up Carolyn and said, I heard you quote your husband on a few statements, and I'd like to know what the heck he was talking about. Can I talk to him? Because I was not at the meeting. So we get on the phone, and we got talking, and we've never stopped talking on the phone, and that was through 2006. And in April 2007, we went and visited. Carol and I visited him in Atlanta and met him personally, and we hit it off. And that was that. And then we went to Hawaii, and then in late, I don't know, December, January, JW, who had shown a bit of psychic ability when I met him, I didn't know how much he was involved in it, and he was interested in the Abrahams, if you've ever heard of them, Esther Hicks. Anyways, we talked about that because I knew about the Evergreens. They were the best medium I considered from 1974 to 2004 when they stopped, 30-year stretch, and intelligence agencies, governments use the Evergreens. Anyways, so JW reports that he started to see new worlds through the windows of his home. He could see other worlds. And I said, well, beg your pardon?
That's
Did
amazing.
Did I say something? Okay, no, wait, I thought I said, okay. Anyways, he starts seeing worlds or something, and he reported, and I said, okay, sure, yeah, whatever you know, I wasn't doing it, seeing it, and he was reporting, but I'm not a judgmental person. I've been around psychic stuff for decades, so we enjoyed JW's stories. But then in February, he said, I'm seeing dead people in my home. I say, what do they look like? He said, well, that leather chair that you sat in the main room there, there's a guy sitting there, and he looks like a dapper gentleman from the 1940s or something, dressed like that period. And I said, can you talk to him? He says, yes, if I address him, you'll talk to me. And he said, there's a bunch of other people. He described a few others. And I said, okay. So personally, I probably said to Cal, boy, J-Dub is really freaking out, man. What happened to him? But we were calm. We did not let our private thoughts in, and we didn't tell JW, which turned out to be important. He was very nervous about telling anybody this because it was not respectable in his world to talk about that, and he didn't want to lose our friendship over it, you know, that we thought he was mad. Anyways, a few days later, he tells me that a Dr. Peter Beter came. I said, do you know Dr. Beter? No. He said, Dr. Beter came to me, and he said, tell Bob hello. Say hi to Bob. And I go, wow, Dr. Beter, my friend died in 1987. He was part of the Secret Council 10 structures, and he died in March 87, and I talked to him many times through the Evergreens subsequently, even was able to take a message to his wife and children in 1988 in Washington, D.C. Anyways, the fact that Dr. Beter spoke to JW, I started thinking, wow, maybe these are the Evergreens gathering around again. They hadn't been functioning since 2004. Late 2004, so I had this absurd notion that the Evergreens were coming back. Don't know why I thought that, but who knows? So the next day, March 18th, we arranged for Caroline to call up JW, and at some point we're talking, and I said, okay, now let's just be quiet for 30 seconds, and let's see what happens. And so on March 18th, after 30 seconds, quiet, Caroline's sitting there with her computer, very fast typist, ready to see what's happening. We didn't know what was going to happen, so we didn't record it. And we don't have a recording of what I asked, but later Ion told me, recalling it, that I asked who's speaking. So apparently I said that, and Ion gave an opening statement which basically went, this is about the process of experience between you, Carolyn, and NJW as relates to the psychic work you discussed last night, which would be March 17th. Well, we hadn't talked to this voice, so it must have been talking to us, it must have been referring to us talking about the Evergreens, you know, the night before, whatever. And so then Carolyn typed the voice talking to me for 2 hours, and with the Evergreens, since I could talk to Marsh McLuhan and everybody, Frank Zappa published those interviews. The thing is that was my standard. If this is a good psychic, then I'm going to be able to talk to, you know, dead people. And I asked if McLuhan was there. He immediately said something, or the voice said immediately something about his daughter who I work with, Mary. And it was very personal, and no one could know it. I knew it. And I go, holy cow, this is McLuhan. How else could anybody know? And he knew to say that so that I know it was him. And so I was impressed with that. So we talked for 2 hours about, Carolyn transcribed it, and then when we finished, I don't even know how we ended, I have to go back and look at the transcript, but anyways, we ended, and then JW came back into consciousness, and he says, the first thing he says is, let's do that again. And I said, why? He says, it felt like a constant orgasm.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Well, that sounds like fun.
Great fun. And so now we've done over 2,600 hours in over a year.
Wow. What is the bulk of some of the information that Ion is bringing through, and why is he showing up at this time? I think that...
Ion, do you want me to give my puny opinion, or should you answer that?
Oh, you can start, and then we'll clean up on aisle five if it becomes required.
Okay, it is pretty remarkable. You can go to howionic.com and click on the About Ion section, and if your computer is relatively healthy, you will hear Ion discuss its main message, which was recorded on March 24th in one of our long 11-hour sessions with Ion after our radio show. And on that, he describes the emptying of the guff and the consequences of that. The guff is, from Hebrew religion, a term that refers to where souls go. And so it's, quote, heaven, or where you go when you transition. So the guff is going to get so filled up by a major mass exodus, whatever that means, a major mass exodus, it'll get so filled up that it'll spill back into this world, and we will be, by default, immortal. And those that understand this process don't have to go to the guff. They can stay here, live in the physical forever, be conscious of this process, and welcome all those that come back by default. Mm.
Wow. Wow. Is this in any way connected to the many prophecies and 2012 timelines that we hear so much about today?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I've had a lot of time to talk. I'm pretty articulate in discussing Ion because I've had time through many hours to refine what the heck Ion means and what the heck I mean and match our terms and get it going. And in any conversation, the McLuhan used to say, there's very little communication in terms of matching. There's a lot of assumptions and miscommunications that people let ride, which is okay, but I'm not that kind of mind. So I know exactly. Now, what was the point? I forgot the point that the thing to add to this. Oh, yeah. Ion pointed out that I was a member of some kind of Illuminati, some part of my present self, in 1400s, and we planted, the Illuminati, whoever they were, planted the knowledge of Ion coming. And so you can find wherever these Illuminati writings, it's in there. But here's the main point. I asked, are you talked about in Nostradamus? And Ion said, yes, in what's called the third century. There's like, each century is 100 quatrains. So in the third collection, the third century, quatrain 6, you can read exactly what Ion, I didn't find this out till a couple of months ago, I just happened to ask the question, and Ion had been talking about the wave that was coming and this and that and the wall for many months, so those were terms. So if you read that quatrain, you will see it mentions the wave will come to the wall. It's literally Ion talk right there in 3.6.